What's good? My name is Chris Styles. I'm back, and this is Trapping Anonymous. It's only entertainment. Please don't get me indicted. I hope everybody enjoyed the Hedge Fund Anonymous series. Before we get back into all that ratchet shit, all the ratchet talk that you know Trapping Anonymous for, I just wanted to get the education out there first and foremost to the people. And then, you know, once we finish with the information, we could get back into the ratchet. But then I'm always try to find a way to bring it back home, because we got to know the education on this stuff and we ain't getting it in school. This is Credit Score Anonymous on this episode. I really, a lot of us black people, a lot of us people don't really know much about credit scores and obtaining credit and maintaining a good credit score and maintaining good credit. So on this episode, we're going to get into that. I want to shout out everybody that copped a Trapping Anonymous sweatsuit, sold out in 2 weeks. I really do appreciate everybody. A lot of people are hitting me up to bring them back. I don't really know if I want to. It's a lot of work that goes into.
We were limited?
Yeah, they was very, very, very limited, man. I didn't. It's shipping stuff, getting people's orders right, sizing, the shop, sending you stuff. It's just a lot of work. So I'm not really in that manufacturing business, but I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what I come out with. As always, TrappingAnonymous.com. You know what it is. My name is at Chris Styles. This is Trapping Anonymous. It's Sony Entertainment. Please don't get us indicted. This is Credit Score Anonymous. Let's get it. What's good, bro?
Ain't shit.
Yo, man, believe it or not, I had people, like I was doing a series with the Hedge Fund Anonymous. I had people like, yo, bring back the Black Entrepreneur episode guy. Bring back the Black Wall Street guy. So I thought it was fitting to have you come up here again.
Right.
I'll let them figure out which episode you is from. My listeners are usually good with being detectives and shit like that. But I just want to get straight into this kind of shit. So what exactly is a credit score?
Credit score is something that basically determines your credit worthiness. I mean, it's on a scale of, it's I think the minimum score is like a 400 or 500 or something like that. I think it's actually like 450.
The minimum.
And then,
okay.
You know, it just determines your credit worthiness, meaning just how likely you are to pay something on time. To pay something in full, or you're going to ghost.
I feel like a lot of people in our culture, honestly, if I'm being real, they don't think about credit score. They don't think about credit. They don't think about, because they're not trying to obtain any loans.
Right.
They're paying rent for the rest of their life. They don't want to become owners of anything.
And we're in a society too. As like black people, we have a cash rules.
Yeah,
everything type of mentality.
The money under the mattress mentality.
Yeah, that same thing. Same thing with like banks. You know,
right.
Like a lot of our people to this day. I mean, I know people that, I know millennials that don't trust banks.
Yo, I was like,
you
that. I
mean?
Used to keep the money in the crib.
Right.
Like in a little safe box.
And that's something I think that goes on not only through the, you know, what you taught in your family, but that's also the lack of information you're given in school. Like, there's like nobody has any classes that talk about how to open up a bank account,
how to open up
a savings account,
right.
You know, how to, you know, have an IRA, you know, how much you should put away for retirement, things of that nature. That's why you see a lot of kids when they're trying to get money and grants and everything and scholarships for school, they have no idea about this kind of stuff. That's the kind of stuff that actually should be taught, or at least should be offered as electives.
Right. So I have the option to know about life insurance policies.
Yeah, like life insurance policies. They think about like. And we're in a day and age too where like GoFundMe is a big thing.
It's huge.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You know, somebody passes away, it's a GoFundMe.
Right.
And nobody should be in that situation, because you look at life insurance policies, you can get a life insurance policy when you're 20 years old.
Okay.
It could be as little as $10 per month on a life insurance policy.
Wow.
And after a couple years, you know, if something happens, you have no burden to your family. You know, you're going to get it.
And I think a lot of it is we always think about our time here, right? We're selfish in that regard. Like, we don't think about the burden that will be to our kids, or the burden will be to our family and friends. We just think we're going to live it up while we're here. And you know what I'm saying? Take it.
Exactly.
But if you put in a life insurance policy, you got something that you've been paying for, you know, a substantial amount of time, you cashing out $500,000.
Exactly.
And this was something that you was just paying a little bullshit $20 a month.
Exactly. Your family got enough money to bury you. They might have enough money to take care of maybe an outstanding bill you might have.
That was another thing that I wanted to graze on, is like, the first thing these people with real money do when they have a child, the first thing they do is open up a life insurance policy on that kid. You know what I mean? It's going to be really cheap.
Up, you know what I mean? That generational that wealth. Even if, you know, the families that aren't exactly quote-unquote wealthy, you know, your upper middle class families, if they're smart enough putting money away, you know, anything happens to a parent before their time, kids set up.
Right, right.
And that's the thing, is like, that goes back to credit, like our trust in banks.
Yeah.
It's just all...
It's all messed up.
It's all fucked up.
Okay, why is good credit important?
I think first and foremost, I think so many companies now, more than ever, reference credit scores for anything, even jobs. I know people who didn't get jobs because they had their credit score run and it was low, and especially in like retail. Because if you have a poor credit score, two things come to mind for an employer. They're like, one, well, this person, you know, their credit worthiness is low, so they're more prone to probably steal, fraud, things of that nature. And it also just kind of shows character.
Isn't that like discrimination, though? Like,
it can be seen as that, but I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Because if this person doesn't have, you know, good credit, there's a lot of reasons why. I mean, that's the economic situation.
That's true, too.
Because they're like, you know, because if you have enough money, think about it. I mean, I know people who came into money, and the first thing they did was start to repair their credit. They got their credit report, and they were like, I owe $400 to Sprint.
Right.
Pay it off.
Right.
You know, I got this. I got evicted 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Pay this off, because, you know, it's in the, it's all in you know, the company, credit recovery company, whatever it is, whatever it's called.
Right.
Like, they're collectors.
Yeah, they got all that.
That's all the money. And so that also shows that you don't have any financial stability.
Okay, yo, you know what my friend was telling me about some show, I think it's called like Black Mirror or something like that. And they had some way or some app that's being released right now. In China, and they said it was like some kind of spinoff of the show Black Mirror, because people, there's this app that allows people to gain a score. And this score is based on your friends that you associate with, the people you follow, the people you hang out with, the things you eat, even down to the food. And it gives you scores. And based on these scores of your social life, interactions, people, things like that, you can get loans. You could get mortgages, just based off of, and it's just like this new way of just like surveilling people and things like that. But I say that to say,
I mean,
it's like credibility.
Well, the way you said that you talked about how like you can get scores from like your friends and family and stuff like that.
Right.
There's ways, for instance, to build your credit up fast. And one of the ways is to get somebody with a really high credit score to co-sign, to put you on to one of their credit accounts authorized user. And that alone, I've seen, I think people have said that credit score has gone up like 75 to 100 points.
And
they might have someone with like a perfect credit score, which is like a 750, whatever. And let's say yours is like a 525. You, if that, because it shows
that
basically,
they trust you.
Yeah, so you have the trust of someone who's very serious about their credit, and they're not going to just, you know, put you on there, you know, for no bullshit.
I didn't know that.
It's just the same way where you may not be able to get approved for an apartment yourself at all.
Right.
But you might have a parent that, you know, that's why they ask for guarantors. You might have to make like $80,000 and have like a 650 credit score to get into approved for an apartment.
Right.
But your guarantor has to make like $200,000.
Yeah.
And has like a 725 credit score.
And
that's why, though, because I mean, they're literally taking up for, you know, them and you.
And another thing with that whole situation is like, they can't have their debt to income ratio. They look at all that stuff.
Yeah.
Even your co-signers. They want to know that, you know, after, you know, they pay their bills and, you know, their car notes or whatever the case may be, that they have enough money for themselves and for you.
Yeah, they don't make sure somebody's not.
Because a lot of people just think because that person got money that, okay, they good. There's a good person to co-sign. But it's like, you don't have money unless your debt to income is right. low. If that debt to income ratio is high, that person don't have a lot of money.
Oh, it's like it's a thing they have going around. It's about Wall Street traders. Like, very young Wall Street traders are ironically terrible with money.
Wow.
Like, they could make their clients millions of dollars, but they're personally terrible with money. Partly because of like the amount of money they have coming in. So you have like a 24, 25 year old trader that may be making $250,000. Wow. But he's literally waiting for a check every 2 weeks. Because now that check might be for $15,000-$20,000, but he's still
so
spending
high.
That much. Yeah, his overhead is that much, and then he also knows that he's going to get a 6-figure bonus at the end of the year. So he might be. I mean, I've known guys that have been drowning in like $80,000-$90,000 debt, and you're like, how the hell you got there? You make $300,000 a year.
Yeah,
but they're like, motherfucker, don't you see how I spend?
And they still live in check to check.
Exactly.
They still live in check to
check. Never about exactly that person's wage. It's about that person's financial behavior.
Okay. So even in our culture, it's a lot of things that I also see is that parents, they will put bills in children's names.
Oh.
So like,
kill that killer kid's credit from the beginning.
Hold on. But if it's done right, it could actually build a kid's credit.
It could work, yeah, if it's done right, yeah.
But a lot of times when, you know, so-and-so got, you know, the cable bill and right. the 2-year-old, how is that even possible?
Well,
why would anyone allow a 2-year-old's name to be on, like, a bill?
Well, the thing is, the thing is, Social Security numbers, when you put them in, I mean, the thing is, everything is computerized.
Yeah.
Like, even when a human inputs that information, it never says how old that person is.
Right.
Like, my son, when he got his Social Security number card about 3 weeks after he was born.
Right.
And it's right there.
Right.
Obviously, you know, we're responsible enough. We're not going to do anything with it. So
right.
we put it away. But I at that point, I realized, I was like, damn, so this is how
it's
people
real.
Get their shit fucked up, because somebody has an irresponsible parent and they've already fucked their credit up.
Right.
And they're like, oh, I got a fresh Social Security number right now.
It's like gold.
And the thing is, like, no credit can go two ways. It can be good or it can be bad.
Right.
Sometimes lack of credit won't gain you credit. Sometimes lack of credit gets you credit, though. That's why, when you are on campus, freshman year of college, and all the banks and credit card companies are there,
you can
open it up because you have no credit, but that no credit works for your advantage.
And that's the thing, because when I was first getting financially educated on all this kind of stuff, they said no credit was just as bad as bad credit.
It can be depending on what you're applying for and at the time in life you're doing it. Like, if you're 30 and somebody's looking at you for like a car loan, and they're like, damn, like, you have no credit. Mm. Like, what have you been, you know, it's almost like being 30 and having no job history.
Mm.
It's like, what the fuck you been doing?
Right.
Like, you should have been doing something. Like, you don't have anything in your name.
Nothing.
Verizon bill, something?
Yeah, so back to when we talk about these kids, you know, these parents, they're not paying the bills.
Yeah.
You know.
They see it as, just like people see a new credit card, they see it as free money and not something you should be used responsibly.
So
like, I should use this credit card for emergencies.
Yeah.
Not, I got a new credit card, let me go spend it.
So now
let me go run it up real quick.
The kid grows up, he tries to apply for a loan or, you know, get a cell phone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they're like, oh, your credit is terrible. And it's because of these delinquent payments back when they were 2 years old.
Yep.
That's fucking sick to me. You
it's
know
crazy.
What I'm saying? And
usually the crazy thing about it too is stuff stays on your credit report for not too long. I mean, not so long. I think after like 7 years or something like that, it's supposed to be off. But the problem is your credit score doesn't change because it's off.
Right.
It's just down. And it looks fucked up at that point, too, because then people look at your credit score and be like, well, we don't know what happened to make your credit score go down so much.
Right.
But, you know, it's like, 425 right now. It's like it's the floor right now.
So if someone's starting off and they want to build their credit, what are some things that they should be doing?
Little things first and foremost. I mean, the thing is like different. It depends on what you have. Things are weighed differently. So for a cell phone, they report that to the credit bureaus, but the cell phone counts very little. So if you're late on your cell phone bill a couple months, that doesn't affect your credit that much.
Mm.
If you're late paying your rent, if you're late paying on your car loan, things of that nature, that's a much bigger hit.
How do they know if you're late on your rent?
Because they report that stuff now.
So the owner of the building, yeah, or wherever you're staying,
it reports it to a credit bureau. Now, and this is also a good thing too, because I know a lot of people, sometimes people will sublease and things of that nature.
Right.
You know, sublet. You can ask whoever you're paying to. You can set it up to where that's also being reported to, because you don't want to just, you know, you want to do that to also establish like your rental history, because that's a big thing to take into effect. You know, when you go get a new place, they like, they want to see your rental history, and then also they check your credit score. But they report all that to the credit bureaus.
Wow. Okay, so you said little things. So they get the cell phone, those kind of low. But if they want to build their credit, what they have to do is make sure that they're paying their rent. Student loans, maybe?
Student loans have a thing called good debt.
Okay.
Good debt means like stuff like student loans don't count against your credit score. Stuff like hospital bills does. Like hospital bills do. Credit, student loans don't. Obviously, home loans, car loans, all that stuff does. But yeah, it's just all classified differently. Like I say, like cell phone bills, cable bills, things of that nature. They report to credit bureaus, but doesn't mean that much. The biggest thing to do in terms of establishing credit or building credit is getting a credit card.
Getting a credit card.
Getting a credit card is the first thing.
It's just so important because even, excuse me, even when I was starting out with building my credit and things like that, I went to the bank and I'm like, all right, yeah, let me get a credit card. And they was like, you don't have any credit. And I was like, okay, so like what? Like, I don't even know the next step.
So after that, if you can't get a traditional credit card, then you get what's called a secured credit card.
Yeah, that's what they gave me.
And a secured credit card is basically you're putting money onto that card. Like, you're going to get approved for a certain limit. They'll say, okay, we'll approve you for $500 limit, but you have to put a $500 deposit down. And it teaches discipline, because you can only spend what you have in there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's reported like a normal credit card.
Yeah, that's what had happened, because I had to put $500 in my account, and I could spend up to $500 as my limit, but I had to always pay it back, maintain that $500 limit. But my credit score jumped like 60 points.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because I had this secured card.
And
after a while, they give you a real card.
Exactly. That's a good thing. Just stay. That's the best thing to do. If you can't get a traditional card, get a secured card. Like, use it for the bare minimum stuff.
Right.
Like, set it up for like an auto payment of like a cell phone bill or something like this. So
right.
It shows you you're paying it, and then boom, you're paying it right back. And it's always good to pay, you know, they always give you like minimum payment $20.
Right.
You should pay like $40 at least.
Right.
Or if not, you know, just paying the whole thing, because
But
your score also depends on how much credit you have. So if you have a credit card and the limit is $2,500 and you've spent $2,000 of that, that affects your credit card. Your credit score negative.
That's the credit card utilization thing.
Exactly.
So even with me,
should keep 30% or lower.
30% or lower. So for everybody, if we're talking too fast, literally, I had the a secured card. The limit was like $500. I had to keep it literally like between $100 and $130. I couldn't go over $130.
Yeah, $150 would be your maximum you should keep in terms of the utilization.
Right. So when you get your secure cards, when y'all get y'all your credit
ones,
cards.
There's different ones, but there's really good ones.
Right.
The Discover. Mm-hmm. Discover secure card, the Bank of America secure card,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's one of the Capital One cards.
Okay.
Or like the best ones.
Best ones to get.
Yeah. Yeah. And American Express used to have one, and I think they discontinued it. But those are like the best ones. Because you also get so many perks like a regular card.
Yeah.
Like I had a Discover secured, and I now have a regular Discover. But I mean, even when I had it secured, I got like crazy cash back. Mm. So depending on like what I spent, I think at the end of the first year, I wound up getting like $200 back in cash back rewards. Because of like just how much I spent and how much I spent in certain places.
Yeah, like even so with like the secure card, I'm telling y'all, when y'all go out and y'all get those secure cards to help build your credit, when you're starting off, literally, you just keep the credit card utilization, only use up to like 30% of the card, and always pay it on time. One thing that I realized that was hurting me was I used to pay it all off. I kept no balance. And that was bad.
Yeah.
Because they was like, you're using it like it's debit. And right. Why should the company say, let me trust you with money if you're just going to keep paying it all off? You have to keep a balance.
Yeah. So, they're in the business of.
That's how they make their money.
That's how they make their money. Like, you have to use it. I've known people that have had cards with high limits get canceled. Because they just didn't use it.
Yeah.
Like, crazy. That'll be with, like, $5,000, $10,000 limits on their cards, but they kept it in the kitchen drawer.
And
it
gets
canceled. It was like they just kept it for emergencies, but they didn't realize, yo, you should be at least having, like, at least one recurring payment on it.
Some kind of balance.
Just have something. Like, have your cable bill go to it.
Right.
And then have your checking account automatically deduct that to cover that every month. So, you know, you're covering all your bases, make sure nothing's late. You just keep that going.
What are these banks looking for when you're trying to obtain a loan or like a mortgage or something like that? What are they looking for in your credit report? What are some things that you got to make sure is pristine?
Obviously they don't want to see bankruptcies,
right?
Things of that nature. But they also, like I said, they judge it on the type of debt you've incurred. Like if it's like student loans, they're like, you know, that could be a pain.
Yeah.
Obviously, that person is going to be paying for a while.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a judge of character. Like, it's not always a numbers game. Like, they literally judge certain things on your credit report, and they apply that to see what type of person they're dealing with.
So they literally look at it and be like, all right, man, this dude was in Gucci all last month.
they see if you got a bunch of write-offs, credit write-offs, because, you know, some certain times when you owe money to certain companies and it goes to collections, whatever, sometimes it just gets written off. They're like, yo, this motherfucker's never paying.
Yeah, they just know it.
Just write it off. And then that's just going to be in your credit. That's going to be in your credit report for like 4 or 5 years. Like, nothing you can do about that shit. It's just like when you have a bank account and your bank account gets closed.
Right.
And that's just going to be, you know, in the system for like 6 or 7 years.
Wow.
Like, this shit you just can't.
So all the people that was doing them scams and all that at the bank thinking, okay, yeah, I'm going to just cash this fake check, blah, blah, blah. That's on your credit report.
Yeah. All that's on there.
And it ain't moving.
And the thing is, a good thing I think everybody should, matter of fact, everybody should do is download Credit Karma.
That was the first thing that I got. The Credit Karma, I applied for that. And that was the first time I was like, all right, I'm monitoring this score.
Because you're monitoring your score. You can put now, I mean, they just added some things in there where like you can put goals. If you want, you can put financial goals in terms of saving. You can put financial, you can put goals in terms of, you might have an ideal credit score. They'll be like, yo, I'm 725. I want to hit 725 in the next year.
Right.
And they'll tell you things how to do it. And they also will give you recommendations on
what cards to get
and personal loans in that nation. They'll do it based on what your score is. So they're not just telling you apply for this.
Yeah.
You know, applying for cards also affects your credit score.
That could be bad.
Yeah. Oh, that's why
the hard inquiries. When you go in to get a car and you want to go buy, you know what I'm saying, a car, and they be like, yo, let me just pull your credit. Yo, be careful. Don't be just letting these dudes pull your credit and without your permission and doing all this shit. You're looking at all these hard inquiries on your credit score. Now you got the hard inquiries on your credit score, and it's your points dropping like 50 points.
Exactly. I mean, you go to Macy's. Yeah. Going Bloomingdale's, like, yo, you want to get a car? See, 30%. No.
Yeah.
I'm good. I already know the answer. I might get approved, but No.
Yeah, because the off chance is just not worth it. The off chance that you don't get approved and it says, hey, you went out and you was looking for a credit card and they told you no. Drop your score and that stays on.
You know, yeah, not as affected. And it's going to, and that's, you know, now you got to work extra hard on everything else you do for the next couple months to get that shit back just for that little hit you took.
Right. So
that shit will drop your shit like 30 points.
That was another thing I wanted to ask you. Is that process long when you talk about when you take a hit? It's easy to, you can lose 40 points in a day.
Yeah.
How about getting those points back?
It's longer. It's gonna be, it's like twice as long.
Right.
It's twice as long. And it's crazy because you're gonna get to a point where you're doing everything right. Especially when you're like first building up, when you're first building up your score, it's moving so fast. It's
everything
so high,
is just booming.
You're like, damn, it's easy. But once you're gonna get to a point where you're not perfect, yeah, but you're like in a good place,
yeah,
and you could be like, damn, what else can I do to
yeah,
get my score
yeah
up? And there's literally nothing you can do at that point. It's kind of like you just got to kind of wait it out and just let the process take its place. But there's definitely a point where it kind of caps off, mm-hmm, and you're like, damn, I've literally done everything I could
right
to get those significant jumps.
Mm-hmm.
And now I just got to stay on my shit. Now it's like that, just that waiting game now. Like, let me just stay on top of this. Let me make sure I pay all this stuff. And you just, your credit utilization is right. All your bills are paid on time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that waiting game. But that is the, like I said, it was like that one little thing drops it down.
Dramatically,
you know, 10
yeah
times as quick as it would be to build it back up.
Listen, make sure when y'all go out there and y'all getting these loans and y'all applying and y'all getting these secured cards and you're building your credit, you're working on your credit, make sure you're on top of it. Log in like you log on to your Facebook and your Twitter accounts. You know what I'm saying? Go to your little Credit Karma account. See what's going on. See the fluctuation. And it has a lot of good stuff on Credit Karma that tells you how to keep these numbers up, how to get the numbers up, how to, you know, and Google it. That's another thing, too. Like, there's like, step-by-step things online
yeah
that will teach you. It's just that, A, people don't want to do it, and B, people don't know about it.
Another good thing, though, too, is, see, I think, you know, there's different agencies that report credit scores. You know, like a Credit Karma, you see, like, two different scores. You see, like, the TransUnion one.
Yeah,
but another, but what it doesn't show is the FICO score.
Yeah,
the FICO, and FICO score is what's used, is the ultimate factor when you're getting, like home loans.
Yeah.
Things of that nature. And the FICO score is totally different. Like, I've seen my FICO score before be, like, 20 points lower than my TransUnion score.
Yeah, mine was actually, like, 20 points higher.
Yeah, it's like that. It's like that. It's like 20, 30 points, give or take sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why it's good to also, like, because once every U.S. citizen is entitled to one free hard copy of the credit report a year.
Oh,
so it's always good to like go online and request that, and they'll send it to you within like 2 or 3 days.
It's free.
And it's the hard copy of every, because things like Credit Karma and stuff, like they don't always show
everything,
single thing on there.
Everything, yeah.
That hard copy of your shit, you'll see everything. And you'll see ways to, I mean, another good thing too is when you see stuff in your report, even if you have something in collections.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta fight that shit.
Yeah.
It's always good to. Like, I've done it before. Like, I've been like, that wasn't me. And they're like, hell yeah, we found this in error, and they took it off.
Wow.
Sometimes
it
happens. Sometimes it don't. Like, but it's always good to be like, dispute it. Like, if it's been long enough, you're like,
that was not
wasn't me.
Right.
It was not me.
Credit Score Anonymous. While I got you here, before we wrap things up, talk to me a little bit about this whole Bitcoin craze. Like, everybody's going crazy about these cryptocurrencies. I did some research on it. You know what I mean? It's a lot of, like, weird technological shit. You know what I mean? But there's ways to make a lot of money, and everybody's going in a frenzy about it. Like, what's going on with this whole Bitcoin thing?
It's like the Wild Wild West.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, there's really no way to almost, like, completely describe it. Like, everybody has, you know, their own theories on just why it's gotten so big.
Right.
Why it's so volatile. I mean, there's stories about, you know, like how these miners, and it's crazy. Like, I mean, the way
the miners, what happened with that?
That's how the prices go up the way they are.
Mm.
It all goes to like these currency miners, and it's so weird, but it's also so crazy. I mean, the stories that you hear about people that got into it dumb early,
yeah,
and you know, are up so much money right now, and then you got stories about like this dude that lost $80 million,
wow,
because he had it all saved on a hard drive and he threw the hard drive out by accident.
What?
Yeah. He had it all saved on the hard drive, the Bitcoins, and he lost it. And the dude, to this day, he's in the landfills where they bought the garbage from his neighborhood. He's looking for that hard drive. He's looking for the hard drive for like a year.
But this wallet doesn't go into something like the money that you have?
Yeah, his wallet was that hard drive.
But there's no like big cloud where. Nah, okay, it says this is your bank account of Bitcoin.
And that's the thing, is like that's literally the thing. Like it can go. That's why that's another reason why it's so crazy. Like there were some hackers a couple weeks ago that broke into a system this brokerage and stole their Bitcoins.
I think that's why Bitcoin
hacked the system and stole their coins.
Just easy like that. Like I think that's why Bitcoin was really invented, because real life hackers could just create fake everything.
But that's the crazy thing about it. It was originally supposed to be an alternative to the regulated currency we have. Like we have the dollars, you know, and other countries have theirs.
Yeah, it's like a universal.
It was supposed to be a universal form of currency.
Right.
But currency isn't supposed to fluctuate in its value the way it does. Like you never hear about it. I mean, obviously the dollar, euro, everything goes up and down, but never like
not
this.
In a day, not in a couple hours.
Yeah, so I mean,
it goes from being worth $4,000 to $15,000 in a week.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous. How can people make money on that? Do you have money invested into this?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think it's like I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
I mean, I go into it. What I try to do is every time I've bought, because I mean, you know, they have Bitcoin, they have Litecoin, they have XRP. I mean, there's literally, I think about 20 major forms of cryptocurrency that are traded.
Right.
And so what I try to do is I try to monitor on the days in which I've invested in it, when I've bought more, I've basically looked at how it's performed. And I try to wait till it goes down, which is what they call buying the dip.
Right.
So if it's trading at, Bitcoin was trading at like 17,000 a day, and I look at it tonight, I see it's trading at like 16,500. I'm like, oh, it's down. So I know that at least if it rebounds to the previous 17,000, I at least know that I'm going to make at least that much back.
But then
more if it keeps going up.
But I'm hearing when it's time to sell your coin, It's a little tricky. What's up with that?
Yeah, it's hard to unload.
And that's, so you could buy it up, and you could watch the money go up.
And that's the thing too, is that you got to be skeptical about a lot of the people that, you know, the so called Bitcoin millionaires, because they're essentially paper rich. They don't necessarily have all that money in possession. They might have a portfolio that says, yo, I own this much Bitcoin, so I'm this much rich. But they don't necessarily have that in their account. They can use that as collateral. You know, certain places will accept them money, or there's places that actually accept Bitcoin.
Right.
There's actually, I think PayPal just started tinkering with their system so they can accept Bitcoin.
Yeah, I heard of some like Lamborghini dealerships that will accept Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's some weird places around New York that take Bitcoin, and which is why now you have the market now where people are selling physical Bitcoin wallets.
Wow.
Which look like little hard drives, they look like little flash drives, and then boom, it's like Apple Pay. You can just scan it somewhere, and it uses it. They take the Bitcoin.
So yeah, when you say rich on paper, I think that is so interesting, because when people think, oh yeah, Bitcoin, yeah, this, that, and the third, they don't realize that Bitcoin is not like a bank where you could go in and take out $500. You can't do that. You know what I'm saying? You'll have to use Bitcoin wherever Bitcoin is accepted, which is, you know, becoming more versed where everywhere around the world, but it's not everything, right? And two, it's not real money. And if you want it to become real money, you have to sell it, right?
Yeah.
And when you sell it, that takes how long? 2 weeks? 3 weeks?
It's a while. I got some pending. I got money pending. I got money pending both ways, Matthew. I got money pending from that. I have money coming out of one of my bank accounts right now to fund my Bitcoin wallet.
Right.
So I can buy more of the shit. And then I got money coming from Coinbase.
Everything is a
going
process.
Going back into my account because bullshit. I'm from shit I tried to sell.
Man, this is bullshit.
But
it's working.
I don't know that much about it. So, yeah, like I said, like, it's something that I'm like, yeah, you can't pass up. You got to at least roll the dice on it a little bit. I don't have the balls to be. I know people that have kind of went balls out and bought a lot.
But there was literally, it was like an article or something like that. And he was just like, hey, man, all of my rich friends started doing it. So I started doing it. You know what I mean? Nobody seems to really like get it so much. But they said a lot of smart people that I know started doing it. And when smart people start doing shit in the market, you want to start doing shit.
It's like, so like Jamie Dimon, who's the head of Goldman Sachs. There was this conference like about a month ago. All the financial leaders in the world, you know, met up. And Jamie Dimon made this huge speech just condemning Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Bitcoin is like is unregulated. Don't trust it. Yeah. It's a bubble. It's going to burst.
Yeah.
At that same time, Goldman Sachs had a department in Goldman Sachs had they bought like $30 million worth of Bitcoin. God. So and that's what I'm hearing from a lot of people. A lot of financial minds are like, hey, look, I don't trust this shit. You know, I don't know what to say about it. But they're also, on the other hand, they're like,
yeah, I'm not letting it go.
Yeah, you can't miss the train on this, so I got to get on it. So
maybe we'll get more in depth on that kind of stuff. I just wanted to definitely ask you about that while I had you here. You know what I'm saying? Thank you for all your insight. I've been getting a lot of crazy emails. Yo, the emails that I get about Trapping Anonymous, man, I really wanted to do like a segment on some of the emails that I get. I had one.
You gotta do like the you get like the mailbag.
Yeah, like the Trapping Anonymous email bag. You know what I'm saying? One email literally said, "Hey man, the girl that you had for," he said it was a young lady. She was asking about the Backpage Anonymous. The girl on the Backpage Anonymous, and she wanted to know if I could release her contact because she wanted to bring a female home with her and her man to have a threesome. And it's like, yo, I love the listeners because they do not hold back. They be asking me the wildest shit and things
it's
like that.
Smart,
I had one person really trying to give me $40,000 to invest, and I'm like, yo, hold on. I'm just like, hold on. I'm just giving out the jewels and the tools and things like that. Please do not wire me any money. I don't know what to do with your money. You know what I'm saying?
That's how it
starts,
yo.
No, and next thing you know, I'm going to be on Trapping Anonymous for some motherfucking scheme on stealing people's money. And you know what I'm saying?
The Trapping Anonymous like hedge fund.
Yeah. That like the shit that we just came off of. So I don't know. Keep emailing me. I'm gonna keep discussing some of the wild emails that I get at the end of shows, and you know, see how y'all like that little segment. My name is Chris Dazz, it's Trapping Anonymous, Credit Score Anonymous. Let's get it. This episode of Trapping Anonymous is engineered by Bunchania Lunsford.